Welcome to Behind the Lore, your behind-the-scenes look at the research that it takes to make each episode of Lore Podcast. I'm Allie Steed, and today I'm sitting down with Sam Alberti to explore the research he did for episode 210, Breaking Down. In this episode, Sam and I discuss how edible bog butter would actually be, illness and war, and our survival instincts in horror movie scenarios. Your support keeps us going, so once again, we're excited to give you a peek behind the scenes. Please join us for a new episode of Behind the Lore. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Behind the Lore. I am back in the studio with Sam. I always enjoy it when we're in the studio, so this is nice. And I like your episodes. This one, the intro, we never do the intros, but it started out a little unhinged with the petition on change.org. And I have a sort of shameful confession. I did sign that petition. I remember when it came out. Not because I wanted to do it, but like I wanted to see what would happen. I thought that would be kind of fun. And I mean, it's really gross. So like, it's best that nobody actually got to drink the red liquid. That would have ended very badly. The bog butter, though.
So
bog butter, though.
What is bog butter?
It's exactly what it sounds like. It's like this ancient butter that somebody made and they buried it in a bog, I think in Ireland. So it was recently discovered and it still looks kind of buttery. So
would you eat it? Like, would you put it on a cracker?
Maybe not on a cracker, but somebody did find ancient yeast from like ancient Egypt that was still active, and they made bread with it with a recipe that they had from some kind of records. So you could have the bog butter and the ancient Egyptian bread.
It would be like a super ancient breakfast or something like that.
It would be archaic toast.
Yes, archaic toast. Oh,
that's
a brand name.
That's a merch opportunity there.
That is.
We're gonna have to tell Aaron about that. Let's make some archaic toast T-shirts. It can have a recipe on it and everything. Mm-hmm.
Well,
it'd
have
great.
To. Yeah.
It'll be amazing.
We just have to get our hands on some bog butter.
Yeah, exactly. Listen, I'm sure that we could definitely get sponsored plane tickets to go over and dig some up, like the weirdest version of geocaching ever. So, from bog butter to the Ohio State Reformatory.
Hard pivot.
What a twist. I enjoyed reading your outline. Was this like a familiar topic to you? Did you ever hear any stories about this prison?
No, not about this one. I've done other prison ones, and a lot of them are kind of similar. But the one thing that I evidently had exposure to was that I didn't know is that this prison or reformatory has been used in like the Shawshank Redemption.
Yeah, that was so cool.
And in a bunch of other shows and music videos and like Air Force One. I can't even remember what scene that would be. But so I have, most people have seen this. If you have seen at least parts of the reformatory, if they've ever seen any of those movies.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, we're all part of the Ohio State Reformatory, I guess. Yeah, I thought that was really neat when I got to it. When I was reading through the episode for the first time, I was like, "Oh!"
Yeah.
And then I Googled it to.
I did too. I looked at look at scenes, and there was websites that like compared, like amateur shots from shots in the movie, just to show like it's the same place.
It actually is the same place. Yeah. Yeah, I thought that was really interesting, and you have this big buildup to the reformatory being built. You go through the pre-construction history and the wars that were kind of fought in that area. And I feel like one of the parts of war that we never really discuss is the inevitable disease that runs rampant through armies. Like, Civil War hospitals are infamous for the amputations and these doctors that are just like one and done with a saw. And like, I forget what movie it was, but like there was a scene that stuck out to me of this soldier was wheeling away a wheelbarrow full of arms, which messed me up a lot. And then doing the research in American Shadows for the smallpox episode, smallpox was everywhere during the Revolution, and inoculation had just become not popular. People did not like it at all, but Washington actually helped destigmatize it because he ordered the troops to be inoculated, which was pretty revolutionary in and of itself.
Yeah.
which I thought was pretty neat. So get your shots, kids. It's pretty important. I would like to not have COVID be so much of a threat anymore.
Yeah, and these some of these, like the scenes from, you know, this is before they, you know, germ theory and stuff like that. So yeah, you just imagine the grisly nature of a Revolutionary War era surgery section.
Yeah, that... no, it would have been pretty dire in some cases. And the Civil War is what we're really focused on in this episode. And those hospital camps, like, you have people crammed together as tightly as possible.
Yeah.
They are a mess. There is disease everywhere. It's honestly shocking that more of the doctors and nurses didn't get sick and die like they did. But, oof. Oh, it's not good.
Not pretty.
No, definitely not. What was really interesting to me was that it seems like Mansfield was a prison long before the reformatory itself was built.
Yeah, so it started out as like a training camp, and then it was used, it kind of just stayed in a kind of a governmental, I don't know if that's the right word, but
the greedy little fingers.
Yeah, so like it was a training camp for different wars, and then eventually a kind of prison was built there for mostly political prisoners, people who were trying to dodge the draft or for politicians or something like that. It had functioned as a prison that was not like with the grounds that it has now, but even before the reformatory was built,
it was still there.
It kind of had that purpose already. So
yeah, it's reading through this, I was shocked at how similar it sounded to me, because the town that I grew up in, we have a big maximum security prison right in the center of town, you know, right exactly where you'd want to put a prison. But it's this big old red brick building. We call it the Hill, because it is on a hill. And it looks like a fortress or a castle.
Yeah.
And when I got older, I learned that there had always been a prison in that general vicinity. And there were other prisons scattered throughout the area, because when the Civil War happened, they started shipping Confederate prisoners up north. And a lot of them ended up at the Helmyra prison, because it was the northern version of Andersonville. It was absolutely terrible. It was cruel. It was horrible. And people were treated really inhumanely there.
Yeah.
So I grew
up... That's a pretty common story for prisons at that point.
Yeah. It is. And so I grew up hearing these stories, and it sounded very similar. And I'm not sure if like is the right word, but one that I find really fascinating is... because of the nature of these prisons and the way the disease and injury did so many soldiers in, they ended up dying there. And because it's the 1800s, they don't have the technology to be able to preserve these bodies to ship them back to their loved ones. So they get buried in Elmira. We have a national cemetery, I think largely because of the part we played in the Civil War. You can go visit... we have a memorial to Mark Twain and everything, because he wrote Huck Finn in Elmira. His wife's from there. But one special section are the Civil War dead. And the Confederate prisoners have rounded gravestones. They're right in the center of the yard. And around the outside are the Union officials and, like, jailers, I guess, who died during the war. And they run along the fence around the exterior. And the story goes is that they were buried that way so they could keep guarding their prisoners even after death.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Are the tombstones shaped differently?
Yeah, the Union ones are pointed at the top and the Confederate ones are rounded.
Oh, so it is like a wall.
It is.
Like, oh, interesting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, interesting is probably not the right word. Yeah.
It's morbidly fascinating. Yeah. Depressing, even.
Yeah, yeah.
Speaking of depressing, what a cosmic joke. The worst kind of irony to have prisoners have to build their own prison around them. I doubt that even the most cynical author could have come up with something ironic. And you made special note of that in your research.
Yeah, it's actually fairly common. Some of the other episodes I've done too, they also use like the prison labor to build their own prison. And yeah, part of it is probably like deliberately punitive or something. Mm-hmm. But also, so this was, you know, it's called the Ohio State Reformatory. And the intention of this was initially, it didn't stay this way, but it was initially to be a place of reformation where people could learn new trades. They could mm-hmm. be able to re-enter society. And so, you know, learning masonry or, you know, whatever else went into building the prison, it was actually
practical skills.
They're designing a trade because a lot of these are younger folks too.
Yeah.
So, it is like, it does sound,
spiteful.
Yeah. And there's, you know, probably some of that in there, but part of it was to develop some of these, some of these skills at the same time, which once it's built, you know, they would have it not necessarily going to be engaging with other big projects like that, I would imagine. So it is kind of, it's one of those things that's uncomfortable, but also like, yeah, I kind of, they're learning it something, I guess.
You understand the logic.
Yeah.
It does not mean it was good.
Yeah.
Yeah. What I didn't realize was, so I've heard of Auburn Prison, and I didn't know that they were, it's a crumbling, crappy prison. I cannot imagine why it has not been closed yet. But I didn't know the history of the prison and how utterly cruel the system that it created was and how it influenced other institutions like the Ohio Reformatory. And I mean, I kind of assumed that a lot of this was just how prisons were. Can you explain the system to us and kind of what happened to prisoners and the evolution of it, I guess?
Yeah. So the and I forget which episode I ran into this first, because I'd actually run into this quite a while ago. But so the Auburn prison developed. So there's different, I guess I had never thought about this until I ended up researching it. But there's different, you know, theories about how, like, what should a prison be like? What's its goal? How's the best way to accomplish that?
Right.
So there's different kind of, you know, ideological systems. And one of them, called the Pennsylvania system, is like you just keep people in isolation all the time, except for like 1 hour a day.
Which we know now is not good.
Which is not good. And so actually the Auburn system, which also isn't great, but that was meant to be more merciful than that. And a lot of the ideas when we pick, you know, if we picture in our heads a prison or a prisoner, we're probably picturing something that came out of the Auburn prison system, which was that people were kept in solitary cells at night, but then they would work together during the days, but they were required to keep silence because the idea was that not being able to express yourself in the presence of other people would kind of break down your sense of self. And then there would be, then you just would be less inclined to revolt or care or something like that. It's hard to see, like, it's hard to see how that's necessarily better than something, but
we're not just going to keep you physically isolated. Yeah. No, you can be with other people. You just need to be socially isolated.
Yeah. And I'm sure that there's a whole lot more into it that I don't know. So, so that's one of like the main parts of that.
Mm-hmm.
But Auburn prisons often were just these big kind of gothic looking foreboding buildings that were meant to ward people off. You had to see them from the outside and be like, ooh, I don't want to end up in there.
Oh yeah.
And some of the stuff that's part of our just popular imagination. So like the black and white striped prison uniforms,
mm-hmm.
people being chained together and walking in lockstep.
Yeah.
When you come in, you're given a number. So again, you're just kind of being
totally dehumanized,
de-identified. Yeah. Yeah. So like, you know, that's what you're. So a lot of that stuff came out from a very specific kind of prison system ideology called the Auburn system. So it seems like a lot of the ones that we've looked at were from that. But of course, like, a lot of that's based around the idea too that prisons aren't massively overcrowded,
right?
And all that. So
yeah, you noted in the 1930s it had become a serious issue in places like the reformatory,
and it only became worse. And that's what happens almost all the time. So you know, it starts out with like, we're gonna have this many people here, and then a decade later, you know, a single cell, like, that's not possible. They have, you know, three people in what was supposed to be a single cell or something like that.
Yeah.
So just really terrible conditions.
Yeah, you noted that in 1978, the Council for Human Dignity, a lot of civic groups sued on behalf of the inmates for how terrible the conditions had gotten from already not spectacular conditions to begin with.
Yeah, like there was already, just in terms of like the number of people, there were already like double the amount of people that were supposed to be there. And then also, you know, the way that they were treated by guards or whatever else is on top of that, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, this lasts a couple years until 1983, where the lawsuit was resolved by prison officials. Do you know if that means it was settled or somebody just dropped it finally? Or
I don't remember. It didn't like fix things. I think it was resolved by the fact like they were going to fix things.
We promise. We pinky promise. We're going to make this better.
Yeah, and that never really.
And then
happens.
In fact, things got worse because they keep closing sections of the prison, and it ultimately closes in what 1990
is when the last prisoners moved out to a different institution.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you said 155,000 men and boys passed through its gates serving time.
Yeah. A lot of folks.
That is a lot of folks. So there were a couple incidents in your research that didn't make it into the episode, mostly revolving around the treatments of inmates and the hole. Can you explain to us what the hole was, and I guess give us a look at a couple of the stories? They're not very cheerful.
No, they're not. Yeah, that's kind of one of the things about an episode like this. They're just.
It's hard.
It's
we want to make fun content for you guys, but by nature of this show, some of our topics are just not.
Yeah,
they're not particularly uplifting.
Yeah. So the hole was basically what we would call solitary confinement.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think that's most people would probably figure that out. But
yeah, context clues alone.
Yeah, but a lot of things happened there. You know, again, isolation. Does bad things to a person on its own. So, of course, people went insane there because they're isolated, but also in terrible conditions. So,
I mean, we lost our minds during COVID when we were all in our apartments and our houses. And it's just because we couldn't see people in person.
Yeah, and imagine if that was also like in a concrete, dark...
Dank.
Yeah, not pretty. But
no.
So, you know, some people... Someone, at least one person, it says, managed to hang themselves there. Another person set themselves on fire.
Jesus.
I don't know how they would even do that, but sometimes there's a few instances when there was like a riot, and so they put a whole bunch of people down there. These are cells that are meant to hold one person, but they would put like two or three people in there.
Boy.
So
who are already frustrated and upset.
Who are already frustrated. So, you know, a couple of guys would go in and fewer than that would come out. So... there's a lot of, it was, you know, it's the most, the place of most desperation, in a place that's already quite desperate.
Yeah. I think that's probably a good way to describe it. Certainly nowhere I would want to end up.
No.
No. You noted in your research that some of the ghost stories go back long before the prison was built, even maybe before the camp was built, Camp Mordecai, I think. Where do you think these original ghost stories came from?
I think they came from people's imaginations. But, there was, some of the sources reported that there were stories that went back to, when it was a training ground, but there was no specifics for any of that.
Mm-hmm.
So,
it's just the nebulous. There have always been ghosts here.
Yeah. So but you know, places like this, again, in the way that folklore tends to work is in a place that's, you know, at the intersection of trauma and anxiety,
mm-hmm.
and curiosity and needing some kind of something to fill in, you know, gaps in your understanding. I think that's where those all these things come from, and especially if it's been in a place either training for war, you can imagine how mm-hmm. traumatic that is, then turning into a prison camp, all that kind of stuff. I think that it would make sense that there's just been stories passed along about bad experiences there, people dealing with things in different ways or something like that.
Yeah, makes sense. Hmm. Well, one of our one of the main stories from this episode is about poor Phoebe. honestly, good for her. Good for her. I'm. Why are men like this? Why are they so creepy? I fully support. I support her actions. You're home alone across the street from this prison. Like,
yeah, she. You know, there is something that's murder's not. I don't think that's not funny, but there's like the idea that the guy says, marry me or shoot me. So she makes it okay.
It's right up there with, what are you going to do? Stab me?
Yeah. Like,
and then you're surprised at the results.
Yeah. In a sense, she gave the guy what he asked for.
You know what?
So,
he gave her options.
Yeah.
She chose an option. It's not her fault that it wasn't the one that he wanted.
That seems like
a him problem.
He could have chosen to give different options.
Marry me or let me leave.
Yes, marry me or let me leave peacefully. And we never talk about this again.
Yeah. When we see each other in church on Sunday, we're just never going to discuss this.
On opposite sides, yeah.
This is not going to be something we bring up. And honestly, I'm glad she got let off, especially with how much she was being harassed over this wealth and hidden treasure that I sincerely doubt existed.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Again, both. Yeah. It just takes a story.
It does just take a story. And you have a huge selection of stories from the reformatory. And I got to tell you, the chair room, if I walked into a room and there was just a single chair in the middle of the floor.
And empty.
An
otherwise.
Empty room, I would turn right around and leave.
There is something about that. Certainly like in our cultural consciousness now, because of like horror movies and things like that, there's just no way to walk into that scene.
If there's one single object in the middle of an otherwise empty room and you're not moving.
Yeah. And especially just a chair. Like it's just
spooky.
What is that implying? Like either.
Where are the other ones?
Yeah. Like nothing good is going to come from
one single chair. Yeah. No. Mm-mm. I would. It's a big old no, because if you walk in there, you're either about to be extremely haunted or you're going to perform that the musical number from Flashdance. And honestly, both options are not good.
they might be the same level of terror.
You know what? Frankly, I don't think anybody would enjoy either option. So to close this out, I'm curious. Whether it's because of the ghosts or because of Shawshank, would you ever go on a tour of the reformatory?
I would go, I think because of Shawshank and some of the architecture, mm-hmm. I would. In general, the ghost thing wouldn't keep me away. In general, prisons don't have a huge draw to me just because, they're just places.
Bastions of human suffering.
Yeah, they're just sad. So I don't want to go, it feels kind of wrong to go around and be like, oh, isn't this cool? You know, like people, you know. But it would be interesting to go and see. Yeah. It'd be like going onto a movie set, I guess. So,
yeah, in a way.
And like some of the buildings are objectively beautiful architecture. So,
right.
So probably, you know.
Well, food for thought.
If you're
in Ohio and you've been to the reformatory, let us know. We're a little curious. Thank you for listening today. Thank you, Sam. This was certainly an informative and very... kind of dark. It was kind of dark recording session, but it was interesting and I was like doing your outlines.
Well said.
And that does it for today's episode of Behind the Lore. Many thanks to Sam for chatting with me today. A lot of folks don't know this, but Lore is actually part of a larger network of shows called Grim and Mild, and you can learn more about those shows and everything else going on over at one central place, grimandmild.com. On behalf of the entire Lore team, thank you for your constant and generous support. And for letting us tell you our stories. And until next time, thanks for listening.